narrative sequence upon which they had agreed, and said, "Let's go back to the night of the 11th of October. What did you do when Mr. Löwenthal advised you that Miss Wetherill had been assaulted?"
"I made for the Arahura Valley directly, to give the news to Mr. Wells."
"Why did you consider the information to be of importance to Mr. Wells?"
"Because he was the father of the child Miss Wetherill was carrying," said Staines, "and I thought he might want to know that his child had been killed."
By now, the courtroom was so quiet that Moody could hear the distant bustle of the street. "How did Mr. Wells respond upon receipt of the news that his unborn child was dead?"
"He was very quiet," said Staines. "He didn't say much at all. We had a drink together and sat a while. I stayed late."
"Did you discuss any other matters with Mr. Wells that evening?"
"I told him about the fortune I had buried near his cottage. I said that if Anna survived the night, she had been very badly beaten, then I would give her Carver's share."
"Was your intention put down in writing on that night?"
"Wells drew up a document," said Staines, "but I didn't sign."
"Why not?"
"I don't exactly remember why not," said Staines. "I had been drinking, and by then it was very late. Perhaps the conversation turned to other themes, or perhaps I meant to and I forgot about it. Anyway, I slept a while, and then returned to Hokitika in the early morning to check on Miss Wetherill's progress to recovery. I never saw Mr. Wells again."
"Did you tell Mr. Wells where the ore was buried?"
"Yes," said Staines. "I described the site in general terms."
Next, the magistrate's court heard the testimonies of Mannering, Quay, Löwenthal, Clinch, Nielsen, and Frost, all of whom described the discovery and deployment of the fortune discovered in Crosby Wells' cottage quite as if the retorted gold had indeed been discovered upon the Aurora. Mannering testified to the conditions under which the Aurora had been sold, and Quay to the fact of the ore's retorsion. Löwenthal detailed his interview with Alistair Lauderback on the night of the 14th of January, during which he learnt about the death of Crosby Wells. Clinch testified that he had purchased the estate the following morning. Nielsen described how the gold had been hidden in Crosby Wells' cottage, and Frost confirmed its value. They made no mention whatsoever of Anna's gowns, nor of the foundered bark Godspeed, nor of any of the concerns and revelations that had precipitated their secret council in the Crown Hotel 3 months ago. Their examinations passed without incident, and in very little time, it seemed, the justice was calling Mrs. Lydia Carver to the stand. She was dressed in her gown of striped charcoal, and over it a smart black riding jacket with puffed leg o' mutton sleeves. Her copper hair, wonderfully bright, was piled high upon her head, the chignon held in place with a black band of velvet. As she swept by the barrister's bench, Moody caught the scent of camphor, lemons, and aniseed, an emphatic scent, and one that recalled him, in a moment, to the party at the wayfarer's fortune prior to the séance. Mrs. Carver mounted the steps to the witness box almost briskly, but when she saw Emery Staines seated on the stand behind the rail, she appeared momentarily to falter. Her hesitation was very brief. In the next moment she collected herself. She turned her back on Staines, smiled at the bailiff, and raised her milky hand to be sworn in.
"Mrs. Carver," said Brum, after the bailiff had stepped back from the stand, "are you acquainted with the defendant, Mr. Emery Staines?"
"I'm afraid I've never had the pleasure of making the acquaintance of a Mr. Emery Staines," said Mrs. Carver.
Moody, glancing at the boy, was surprised to see that he was blushing.
"I understand that on the night of the 18th of February you staged a séance in order to make contact with him, however," Brougham said.
"That is correct."
"Why did you choose Mr. Staines, of all people, as the subject of your séance?"
"The truth is rather mercenary, I'm afraid," said Mrs. Carver, smiling slightly. "At that time, his disappearance was the talk of the town, and I thought that his name might help to draw a crowd. That was all.
Did you know, when you advertised this séance, that the fortune discovered in your late husband's cottage had originated upon the gold mine Aurora?
No, I did not, said Mrs. Carver.
Did you have any reason to connect Mr. Staines with your late husband?
No reason at all. He was just a name to me. All I knew about him was that he had vanished from the gorge, and that he had left a great many assets behind him.
Did you not know that your husband, Mr. Carver, owned shares in Mr. Staines' gold mine?
Oh, she said, I don't talk investment with Francis.
When did you first learn of the Bonanza's true origin?
When the Reserve Bank published the notice in the paper in late March, asserting that the gold had in fact been found smelted and was therefore traceable.
Brougham turned to the justice. The court will note that this announcement appeared in the West Coast Times on the 23rd day of March this year. Duly noted, Mr. Brougham.
Brougham turned back to Mrs. Carver.
You first arrived in Hokitika on Thursday, the 25th of January, 1866, upon the steamer Waikato, he said. Immediately upon landing, you made an appointment at the courthouse to contest the sale of your late husband's cottage and land. Is that correct?
That is correct.
How had you learned of Mr. Wells' death?
Mr. Carver had conveyed the news to me in person, said Mrs. Carver. Naturally, I made for Hokitika as swiftly as I was able. I would have liked to have attended the funeral. Unfortunately,